Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Black Pit Blues by Gabriel Hart, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. Read by the author and Jean-Paul Garnier.
As he drove home from his weekly therapy appointment, Richard's mood began to plummet. He left the appointment on an inspired high. Evasive breakthroughs and revelations finally made clear through the applied logic inside him all along, tearing at his ribcage to be unleashed. For a while back there, he thought he might be cured. He let himself get too excited, too quick. Now, he witnessed his shadow forming in the dimming light of personal illumination, unable to find the tools to balance the hemispheres. His last bit of desperate logic asked,
"Am I getting depressed out of nowhere simply from a reverse Pavlovian reaction to the sun setting?"
Maybe it was the fatigue from the long day, but as he watched our inconceivable flaming ball disappear behind the mountains, it was clear why. Now, he knew too much. Now he understood too well how it all worked, the amoral inner workings of human behavior. One insidious element withstood: fear. A fear that now transcended beyond motive or phobia. A self-sufficient entity whose power lay in the ability to feed off of itself. Nothing or no one to blame for its presence except its very presence. How one might attempt to describe God to an atheist. If this feeling refused to subside, he imagined himself yearning for the devil-may-care pre-therapy days of fear-based motivation, delusion, and self-destruction, where at least he could still harness the essence of romance. The only thing propelling him home was his dog, a white, scrappy Jack Russell who had one of those ecstatic wind tunnel grins. He named him Chipper after his bright disposition. His main preoccupation was a ceaseless washing of Richard with saliva-drenched gratitude for rescuing him 2 months ago.
"If only human beings could be that fearless with their acknowledgments," he often thought.
Now in a slow panic, he combed his mental Rolodex for every tool the therapist gave him to battle the weight of this erratic melancholy.
"At least I'll be home soon and will be allowed to stare at something other than this bleak horizon,"
he thought, as he traveled up Oak Glen Road, past the city limits of Hemville to his right. Hemville was one of those repellent anti-towns you might accidentally be born in, but you'd never right mind move to. Beyond the 1 square mile radius of dilapidated trailers and homes in various states of natural decay or probation or remodel, there was nothing there. No schooling or even businesses legal. Luckily, you rarely saw a child forsaken enough to be born in Hemville, as its main industry was the raising of pit bulls for fighting. While this was the main event in Hemville, no one outside of the shithole town would ever witness it. The town's imposing, nefarious reputation would act as its own security wall. What they would witness? Scar-damaged pit bulls past their prime, barely hanging on, left on the side of Oak Glen Road at Hemville city limits. It dawned on him. Richard was afraid he was going to see one. He realized this was the reason that this hollowed-out sense hit him every time he passed Hemville. It was an empathic anger, unable to conceive why someone could just throw away a living thing. These pit bulls had created their own canine ghetto on this stretch of road. Too often, he would have to swerve to miss one. Unable to distinguish the borders of the road versus the shoulder, the overgrown orphans would often take over parts of both lanes, straying aimlessly like homeless in Skid Row, where they saw no logic, therefore no bounds, for their discard. And there it was. He saw one lying on the side of the road. Richard was flash-choked, hypnotized by mortality. He prayed he could somehow unsee it. He looked in his rear view and saw the light change green about a mile down the road, unleashing another batch of rush hour commuters. Not one for restraint, he pulled up to the dead dog in the middle of the asphalt, in futile hope the hit was recent and there may be some life left. The second he hit the brakes, the black pit sprang to its paws. Richard had merely interrupted another rogue nap anywhere the dog's exhaustion and boredom would sluggishly dictate. His nubby tail wagged pathetic like a compromised metronome, trying to communicate, "Are you my new person?" Richard took a knee to pet the pit's short, moonlit, shiny coat. He noticed infected areas where no hair would grow, no doubt battle scars from the ring. He saw the pleading desperation in, he looked underneath, his eyes, already welling up with moisture and hope.
"Does Chipper need a friend?"
he thought. Richard was constantly guilt-ridden by the time he had to leave Chipper alone at home, after his long work hours and extra mental health obligations. If he opened his car door, he'd likely jump right in. He had a soft spot for this misunderstood breed ever since his ex's pit showed him how sweet they could be. That it was humans that corrupted them into such aggressive, unpredictable creatures. Which this one would be a prime candidate for. His shadow elongated as the headlights from the oncoming batch of cars began to intrude on his tender moment. The one in front honked premature to warn him, in case he was some crazy thing that knew no difference between the road and the shoulder.
"Sorry, buddy, can't do it. Good luck, pup,"
he said, giving the pit one more pet, waving a silent sorry to the traffic as he jumped back in. Now, of course, he was stuck in traffic.
"No good deed goes unpunished,"
he thought.
"Not even an abandoned good deed."
His car crawled along, now enveloped in the slow-moving fleet of working stiffs, still working to get the hell home. The traffic had him trapped in the right lane. Richard's skull shrunk tight around his brain with the nonsensical honking that came next. He looked behind him, throwing his arms up.
"Ain't gonna make us go any faster, folks."
What Richard didn't know is that it was the black pit they were honking at. The dog had been following him in bumbling yet determined pursuit, jumping up on his hind legs, tapping on the back bumper with his paws any chance he got. From an outside perspective, it appeared Richard was the owner who abandoned the black pit, trying to get away clean. No doubt the trail of cars were residents of his own Bonita Pines, the next town up full of slightly more concerned citizens in the backwoods spectrum. One guy stopped his car, got out and banged on Richard's trunk, screaming,
"Get your fucking dog!"
Richard gunned it, swerving onto the shoulder. He swore he heard the guy say he had a fucking gun. The black pit galloped after him, onto the shoulder, then out into the road. It appeared Richard was doing that asshole thing of impatiently passing everyone. A quarter mile down from the jam, Richard slowed back down to the rural speed limit of 30 miles per hour. He decelerated further to ease his rapid heart rate, overamped from who he thought was a road rager threatening to kill him.
"The fuck was that?"
he said aloud.
"The guy have some aversion to French fries or something?"
Richard was referring to the often delicious exhaust from his veggie oil converted Volkswagen New Beetle, which everyone thought smelled like fast food fried spuds, including the black pit, who eventually followed the smell all 5 miles to Richard's house. It was a small miracle the black pit didn't get hit by a car during his hour-long journey. The way his coat camouflaged him into the night, making him virtually disappear into the zero light pollution darkness. The way he kept his nose turned up to capture the sweet smell of whatever was cooking in that fried oil he knew was just for him. Nose, not eyes on the prize. On the final stretch, his tail wagged with accelerated gusto as he zigzagged up the final stretch, the intoxicating exhaust becoming more concentrated as Richard pulled into his driveway. The pit saw the lights on, welcoming him into his new home. Better yet, he saw his new person was already cooking. Something different than what he had been smelling, something better. This was quite an exhausting little chase game, the black pit thought. Though he liked games, he was tired of this one and wanted to eat already. He scratched at the front door, not wanting to bark quite yet, as he was still feeling out the pack order of Richard and... Oh, there's another puppy. Could this get any better? The scratching wasn't working, but that full-sized window in the kitchen looked like it would. He trotted over to the glass and sat there like a good boy until his new person would see that he was ready to eat.
Oh my God.
Richard assumed he was having a full psychotic break when he saw the black pit outside his window. He dropped the full pot of pasta and boiled water on his torso, scorching the entirety of his midsection, crotch, and upper thighs. He screamed, blood surging, heat racing from veins to extremities. He bellowed every blue obscenity in every inflection, dumbfounded by the surreal sight. The black pit, which had nearly seduced him back on Oak Glen Road, turned the harbinger of his own fraying stability. Richard waddled violently to his front door, swinging it open. The shock of the cold night air hit his blistering skin as he pointed to the wayward traveler.
You for real? Get out of here! Get out!
He made sweeping gestures towards the forest with his index finger.
I said get out of here! Get!
The black pit's eyes watered in disbelief at the sudden change of plans, but he reluctantly got the message. He had heard that tone incessantly from his last person, and it only meant two things. Cruelty, then abandonment. He lowered his head, sulking in defeat. But respecting his strange and mean new person was better than not having a new person at all. He trotted off, disappearing into the enveloping darkness of the pines, now anything but Bonita. While a grueling year and a half later, Richard was finally experiencing real progress at his therapy sessions. Not the deceiving kind that would last for an hour before the floor would fall from under him again, but the real permanence of gravity, where he felt his feet firmly placed on the earth, able to take small but confident steps forward. As someone who fancied himself a writer, he had never been so glad to run out of material. Not just fodder at therapy, but at home in front of his taunting computer, where he was convinced everything he wrote had to be some kind of heavy, semi-autobiographical exorcism in order to be good. As part of his finishing therapy, he had made a big decision to take a break from writing, just to see what would happen. He grew incredibly anxious every time he wrote, his own worst critic who would never be satisfied. As much as he was getting out of his system, it had an accumulative boomerang effect that would leave him feeling worse than before. One Saturday, he bravely explored the mundanity of idle time. He found an unlikely power in it that gave him an unspoken solidarity with his neighbors, whom he always wondered where they got their empty smiles from.
Maybe they were empty because they too had run out of material,
he thought. One thing that was full of its own material, yet unemotional and did all the thinking for you? The morning paper. Richard couldn't remember if he had ever done something so simple as to sit down with his morning coffee and read the damn paper.
Let's do this, he said.
He scanned the front page of his small-town news, zeroing in on this substantial headline toward the bottom that continued on page 2.
Bonita Pines Preserve closed due to new super wolf attacks. 3 local hikers were attacked on Friday afternoon by what rangers are calling a new dangerous hybrid wolf breed. The incident happened in Bonita Pines Preserve, the protected area of wilderness that incorporates Upper Bonita Pines with the lowlands of the Hemville area. The 3 experienced middle-aged hikers were walking the popular Needle Lane Trail when approached by 5 odd-looking black wolves who carried a wider gait and smaller ears. The wolves' short, black coats also set them apart from the typically fluffy Bonita Pines wolf. We just stood there, shocked at what we were looking at, said Mike Horowitz, one of the hikers. Next thing we knew, 3 of them were paired up with each of us and lunged. They successfully broke the skin at our necks and torsos, while the remaining 2 just howled. It took all we had to fight them off enough to reach for our pepper spray, which held them off enough for us to run, another hiker added. The three ran a quarter of a mile to the ranger's office, where they were soon met by paramedics who treated the three before transporting them to a nearby hospital. "We've seen superwolves around this area before," said Ranger Michael Leahy. "A typical superwolf, which is also known as a coy wolf, is a crossbreed of coyote and wolf. The hybrid breed is much more dangerous than their original species, as they carry the strongest characteristics of both, bred to hunt and survive through any elements. They've been turning up in greater numbers this year in the built-up areas of eastern North America. Now, the difference between a coy wolf and what we saw attack the hikers is that there is a third element that has been added to this gene pool in the form of the overbrimming stray pit bull population that has been infesting the outskirts of Hemville by Oak Glen Road," Ranger Michael Leahy said. Oak Glen Road borders Hemville from the preserve. Considering the proximity, it's been inevitable that these pits would eventually venture into our forest and not just pack up with other breeds of feral canines, but breed with what is around. The result? A new super pit wolf, who carry not just the survival skills of the other crossbreeds, but the aggressive nature that has been trained into pit bulls by the notorious Hemville dogfighters. As we have now learned, these guys are not afraid of humans. Unlike the previous super wolf breeds, who kept to their customary food chain, concluded Leahy. Bonita Pines Preserve will be closed until further notice.
Jesus, what next?
Thought Richard, as he folded the paper, slapping it on the table like he was swatting a fly. He would have to think of an alternative to pass the time this weekend. Reading only made him want to write again, and he was getting the Jones, especially after reading that fantastical stuff going down in his own neighborhood. His mind began to accelerate, tilt-a-whirling with what seemed like every scene in history through his head. Every doomed possibility with every false start hero who tried to fix it. Every victim and every single apathetic mass of dehumanity with every opinion that would do nothing but create a cacophony in Calamity's favor. He stopped it clean like a dealer with his roulette wheel, though the ball, of course, kept rolling. It landed on a guy agonizing in front of his computer again, getting up to pace every 5 minutes, going outside to smoke every 10, before returning to the screen for another 20. This circular behavior, he could not stop. He sat gazing, drenched once again in the glow of digital semi-literate jargon he would love today and hate tomorrow. Engaged. Possessed. Choke-held by his own work, he had no idea that the sun had already been down for 11 hours when he saw the clock say 4:12 a.m. While it was nearly the next day, Richard would not see the sunrise. The hour of the wolf had come, that time between night and dawn where one's deepest fears would come to roost, where demons and their personifications would be rendered most powerful, and their dreamers most vulnerable. He shut the computer off, the only light on in the house, as he tried to get undressed for bed in the disorienting black, just wanting to get it over with. Balancing on one leg to remove his jeans, Richard fell over, startled by Chipper going absolutely nuts, barking Blue to warn his person.
Shh, easy there, buddy.
It was always a transparent attempt at acting like nothing was wrong, when Richard knew something was wrong. He heard it outside, every corner of his house. A scattered violent scratching, a swelling chorus of howling, a feral, tuneless, and painful barking. Chipper had already done 3 spastic rounds. He was well onto his 4th when Richard got the balls to look out his bedroom window. The house was now surrounded by a new kind of nature, a writhing, circling membrane of black canines, super pit wolf, whatever you call them. Their sleek, dark coats, small ears atop proud wolf manes, their mouths peeled back to reveal protruding fangs, evolved to an even larger scale that began to make the wooden front door their fibrous appetizer. They had already tried and failed with the stucco around the sides, but this was like eating through cake. like demonic sperm fighting over the most vulnerable spot of an egg. They all collected at the door. They climbed atop one another, frantically gnawing at the splintered wood for the chance to be the first one to take a bite of fresh prey inside. Richard scooped up Chipper and ran to the back patio. The hellhounds had a sixth sense, following him around the entire length of the chain link. Every time he stepped once, they stepped twice, always a step ahead, a staggered mirror daring him to see the full reflection. He collapsed in the middle of his living room, holding Chipper into his torso. He doubled over in upright fetal position. He held on to his puppy so tight he thought he might hurt him, but he couldn't risk the susceptibility when they eventually entered. Richard's last good deed that wouldn't go unpunished. Being Chipper's human shield until there was nothing left of him in the house but a smeared crimson puddle. As the sun rose that morning over Bonita Pines Preserve, postcard-perfect shards of light shot through the trees, the rays suspended like scaffolding holding up the balance of nature. It gave warmth to an open meadow where 22 black pit wolves frolicked in an unruly yet relaxed cluster. Just finishing the last of their night's blood-seasoned bounty, the ones closest to center watched with pride as their new member, a scrappy white Jack Russell, finally helped himself to some bones with plenty of meat on them still. Chipper hesitated to chew at first. For a while, he would be content to lick the pungent essence from his person's marrow, his way of continuing to say thanks for rescuing him.
SETI Girls by Jean-Paul Garnier, with music by Fog Machine, read by Heather Morgan.
Are you tired of being alone in this great big lonely universe? Can't find a girl on your home planet? On Alpha Centauri, hot girls are waiting around our relative clocks to blow your world. We're so hot, we've got three suns, and we're ready to share the fire. We got the transmission, and we're waiting to hear more. Call now and tell us of your deepest desires and fantasies, and we'll get back to you in just 8 short years. 1-900 SETI Girls. Only 199,999 a minute. We'll be MILFs by the time you call, so don't hesitate. Call now. We can't hold on any longer. 1-900 SETI Girls. Do it.
The Skin Thing by William Weiss and Garth Jackson, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. The Skin Thing hangs in the sky as clear as church bells on a cold, crisp morning. It puts a torch to the world to watch it burn. The sky explodes. We can smell the colors, the reds, oranges, and yellows blowing into the valley, mixing with the dust of radioactive clouds. The Skin Thing punches holes in space and time. It binds us with its bloody hands. Hallucinations are necessary here. From the sky, an axis of solar gold, slowly spiraling. Imagine an object of inconceivable beauty. Suddenly, everything matters. In the sky, the breathing vortices of sky, the skin thing disguises itself as a dome of dark pine on a vast northern plain, its metallic hues coming alive as it enters the rust belt. The skin thing's familiars, the geese. The sky resounds with their chevrons. Subatomic clouds of sentient particles, death eaters, surround us everywhere, and the skin thing paints the world gut red. It drains the ink of children who fall beneath its bloody eye. Tonight, a 16mm silent porno dream features a montage of clumsy Spanish galleons absconding with New World gold and silver within a tightly framed foreground, a must and stained bed, a brief insert of a red light bulb screwed into a crudely disguised Judas hole. When I investigated, the skin thing was spying on me, emitting a high-pitched sibilant giggle, its genital tentacles writhing and slapping wetly against the plaster in excitement. It was aware that I was watching and chameleoned into every color of the spectrum without embarrassment. The nipples of women and men now weep and disgorge bloody milk with the odor of stillborn calves. Death eaters chatter. The dream cuts to a shot of a small white room, slightly out of focus, covered everywhere with a glittering silver fabric upon which the magnificent flesh engine sits. Below a low table, there are fragments of narrative, character, plot, and setting, all machined directly from ready meat puppets. The word as mitochondrion, an organelle wherein the phoneme is reduced to its Ursprach, inchoate energy, ionotropic receptor crossing the membrane of mind, cascades of cellular noetic effects. The skin thing pauses and briefly glances at the camera. A row of identical period modern clocks behind the skin thing suggest a control panel. It zips up its flight suit and levitates, gathering all the fragments as it rises. Tentacles waving, it brandishes a monstrous erection. The geese are on the wing, speaking loudly. The sky drizzles dim radioactive pulses over the planet's cold, gray carapace. In the silent vacuum, what remains of the air has fallen to the frozen earth like snow. The reader is buried under it. The reader is an alien platypus-like creature, or pangolin, a seeming blend of many animals. Its coat plates come in as leather as winter approaches. Frost-blind lenses turn towards the rimed horizon of a dead world. The flesh engine is now hidden among razor ice. I climb the deep silo shaft to the surface. Concrete bunkers punctuate the coastline with tactical regularity. Peering myopically out of narrow slits in the concrete, I observe an ecstasy of small, luminous birds in flight. The desert landscape hallucinates colors as though it has cannibalized the Datura it mothers, and since it is blizzards and zero on the high plateau, we make heavy hammers out of isotope exposure and fight back. The skin thing yawns. The world breathes. For everything afterward and nothing afterward, a republic of insects, the light of mushroom clouds in their compound eyes. The world breathes them into manifestations. They are hardened survivors. On the water, a fleet of dead, bloated, floating polar bears passes. I awaken from the dream, dreaming that perhaps it has been so long now that we have forgotten we are human. There is nowhere to stay, anywhere in particular, manger or not. There is no future. Scanning ahead to the approaching evening with temporal binoculars, I see that there are no doppelgangers darkening my door. No Adam and Eve, for that matter. No flood, no prophets, no messiahs. I stay out of sight. I write. The accumulation of words sews me safely into the walls of a bone house, in strategies of permanent containment. Flesh confetti. The wind is wet with flesh confetti. The word is that there is no light at the end of the tunnel, and fiction has been trumped. Indeed, perhaps there was, before ours, an infinitude of failed universes. Universes that did not evolve self-consciousness. Universes made entirely of meat. Designed universes. Universes of mass destruction. Universes that matter and those that don't. We are stars in a universe that doesn't matter. The skin thing, you see, the desert in it, its dark, black heart. It entangles itself in the spreading roots of events inside its new world. Content. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Black Pit Blues by Gabriel Hart, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. SETI Girls by Jean-Paul Garnier, with music by Fog Machine. And The Skin Thing by William Weiss and Garth Jackson, with music by Red Blue Black Silver. Theme music by Dane Lesko. Out now, Simultaneous Times, Volume 1, Paperback Science Fiction Anthology. Available at spacecowboybooks.com and lulu.com. Be sure to visit us at our store in Joshua Tree, California, or at spacecowboybooks.com. And connect with us on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the program. And now a word from other fellow Joshua Tree podcasters.
We live in a very weird place. A dry and mountainous land of poisonous creatures and desert monsters. Missing tourists and strange lights in the sky. Join us every Friday at 10 p.m. for a late night voyage across the mysterious Mojave Wilderness. On KCDZ 107.7.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Are you looking for a new way to think and transform? Tune into Myth Matters, a biweekly podcast of storytelling and conversation about mythology and why it's important to life today. Find a more creative way to live. Learn more at mythicmojo.com and keep the mystery in your life alive.
Have you ever wondered why people live in the desert? I'm Dawn Davis, and I host Desert Lady Diaries podcast. It's a weekly conversation with women who found their home in the Mojave Desert. Each week, I talk to women who were either born and raised in the desert or felt called to come here and what the desert means to them. You can learn more about the podcast and listen at DesertLadyDiaries.com.